This is Peter Allen celebrating 75 years of a Met on radio. Austrian-born Otto Schenk has produced 16 operas at the Met, including all four operas of Wagner's Ring Cycle. The highlight we're about to hear comes from the Valkyrie broadcast of April 1989. The cycle was videotaped for the historic presentation of the Ring on PBS. The 17-hour TV series achieved the composer's goal of giving all four operas on four consecutive days, a feat that would be too tiring for singers. In Act 3, Sieglinde wants death, but Brünnhilde tells her she's carrying a son who will be the greatest hero in the world. We'll hear Sieglinde, sung by Jesse Norman, in her ecstatic reaction. James Levine conducts. You've just heard a highlight from 75 years of live broadcast from the Met.
As I look at the repertoire you've sung and the recordings you've made, both of you have, I think, unusually varied repertoire. Carita, you have sung everything from, you know, Puccini operas and Scandinavian songs to Bernstein's Kater Symphony. And you too, Ben, everything from Andrea Chenier, which you'll be doing next season at the Met, to Italian opera and French art songs. And is that because you find it intellectually challenging and stimulating, or vocally stimulating?
Well, for me, one of the things that I do is I probably do less opera than everybody realizes. And because I often do very difficult pieces, a lot of Wagner and once in a while the Chenier or a Turandot, but in order to keep myself vocally healthy and lightened up a little bit, it's wonderful, and not only vocally but also just artistically, to tackle art song. And it's for two reasons. I love the repertoire. I enjoy getting to do the recitals and the interaction with the public, but also that it pours that oil on the vocal cords.
Is that also true of some of the roles that require flexibility, Mozart Idomeneo, or I remember a Chicago performance of the Beethoven Christ on the Mount of Olives with the most florid tenor aria that I've ever encountered. Is that also partly oil on the voice?
Yes, I might say that a few years ago. So when I come to do the Metropolitan Opera at the opening of next season, or near the beginning of next season, I do Idomeneo, and I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that I can get the Fioratura version of War del Mar in. But that's one of the reasons, is to keep the voice lighter. In fact, just now I was working for a little bit of time just trying to find that lighter connection.
Carita, I can't think, and I'm sure that somebody will write in and say, doesn't Mr. Fogel know his history, but I can't think of any singers who have encompassed Schoenberg's Girlieder and Manon Lescaut. So I would ask you sort of the same question. Is that a conscious choice on your part?
Well, if you, Ben, if you sing, did you say you sing less opera than anybody realizes? I sing more concerts than anybody realizes. So that concerts are a good way to expand your repertoire. And also mentally, it's inspiring and refreshing to change, you know, styles and the characters and the stories. And it just makes it richer and more interesting.
Carita, have you thought about, do you retire roles? Have you said, you know, I think maybe my time on this particular role is finished, and let's
Talking
maybe move on.
Talking about
No. I was actually thinking about an example of mine, but I'm thinking maybe...
I do, indeed.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe, you know, Meistersinger, and it's very funny, you'll laugh at the reasoning. But it's not because I can't sing Stolzing anymore, I certainly can. But I thought about just retiring Stolzing, not because of for any vocal reason, but because the Ava is usually now the age of my daughter, and I'm beginning to be a little embarrassed by that.
Well, makeup can do wonders.
It does. Sometimes, you know, although these opera roles can't be described as they must be a certain age. For example, Yennefer, I hope to sing many more Yennefers, but I know that the clock is ticking, and I'm just hoping that since I love the opera so much, maybe I could switch into Kostelnitsch.
Well,
in this opera,
people have done that.
My plans are in Ortrud, so who knows?
Well, actually, you've led perfectly into where I was going to go with the next question, which is the opposite of what roles you've retired. What important parts in particular haven't you yet tackled that you would love to?
Well, the New York Times and other newspapers have reported that I'm going to be doing Siegfried coming up in the 2008, and I guess we can say on the radio that that actually is true. They did do their research on that one. So 2008, Aix-en-Provence, I trot out Siegfried for the first time, which should be rather interesting. I waited a while. And then the following season is scheduled for Siegfried, Götterdämmerung. So that's something I have not heretofore put into the repertoire.
And what about you, Carito? Are there parts, major parts, that you haven't yet tackled that you hope someday to sing?
Well, I would like to add about those parts that I would like to retire. There are certain parts. And when I had my first Lohengrin engagement, I thought it's time to move on. For me, it doesn't work to sing Pamina and Lohengrin. I enjoyed so much doing Pamina, but I felt after that it was time to move on. But talking about then the roles that I would like to tackle, like Kostelnitschka, which I find an extremely fascinating part also as a character, so as a role, that's extremely interesting. Also, Pikovaya Dama, I would love to sing that old lady, just because she has that fantastic aria, and I never forget when I did it at the Met, and it was with Leonie Ruzanek. And I just thought she was just fabulous, and it was a wonderful souvenir. So those kinds of things. So I hope that those would work. I know that there was, talking about rumors, there was a rumor that I would do Isolde in London in a couple of years' time, but I can tell now officially that's not true. Yeah, so...
And is it a role that you ever think you will tackle?
At the moment, my head is totally void in any direction. I really don't know. I just, I have a complex relationship with Wagner roles, so let's put it that way.
Don't we all?
Could be.
And this production is, and I don't say this critically, just as an observer, this is a relatively static production as opposed to a physically very active. Is there a different set of challenges in maintaining some kind of strong vocal smoothness, if you will, or vocal production in a really physically active production?
Absolutely. Often, let's take Peter Grimes as an example. You're going to be very physically involved. And then you come to this hut scene and you think, oh, my stars, I still need to sing beautifully, too. And it's too easy to sort of go into the grip and grind of a voice. And when you're doing a lot of physical activity, that is the tendency that one has.
Are there roles like that for you, Carita, that really challenge you physically as well as musically?
Oh, yeah. Salome and Fidelio, so different from each other, but definitely in these particular productions that I did, it require a certain fitness level that you just, otherwise you're not able to do it. Sometimes it also depends how you as a performer are as a type. Certain types are more physical, and then that will work better. So, you know, Manon was also very exhausting, maybe because it's such an uneconomical opera somehow. So
I wonder if you've had the experience of having to say to a stage director, no, I can't do that. I can't do that and sing the way I have to sing at that moment.
I'll even name a name because it's for the very self-same Lohengrin production that we are talking about. And one of the things that I was instructed was to have an isometric tension in the hands. The hands are generally slow-moving and I suppose a bit like Tai Chi, if you can have that in your mind. But that there was be an isometric tension, so you could hold the hand in the air and it would, from both sides, have an equal tension. But that, for me, given that it's a five-hour opera, will slowly crawl up from your hands and your arms into your throat, and by the middle of the second act, you are done. So I did speak with Robert Wilson about this, and I said, look, if it's too much isometric tension, if it's too strong, it kind of crawls in your body and eventually ends up in your throat. That's sort of what happens to singers. And it will make it impossible to finish the opera with any kind of aplomb. And he was perfectly able to adjust and help me sort of understand, and I could help him understand both what I needed, mm-hmm. and then we worked on how it worked. So I've been very pleased about that adjustment.
Have you had, Karit, any experiences like that, where you've just had to say, I can't do it that way?
Well, this Bob Wilson production was close, but it was more, I was just so shocked, and it took to understand how actually it all goes together with the music and all, but with the support of the house and the team and the flexibility also that many things were adjusted. I was good. Allowed to make them my own. But I remember in 96 when I worked for the first time with Luc Bondy, I did his Don Giovanni in Vienna. I had become a total fan of his. First I thought in Vienna in 1990 that I will never ever work with him again. then I realized actually when the performances started that I was doing the part of my life, and this experience changed me, and I actually experienced for the first time what it means when during the run a part starts developing and it's a sign of a good direction, and I had never had that before, and that's why I dared to tackle the Don Carlo 6 years later when he asked me. I realized I wasn't fit enough for his requirements, and I just decided I have to do something, and then I started a different workout routine just to get more stamina. Wow. I didn't want to give up because I wasn't fit enough to do. I hated to say to him that although something looked right and felt right, but only to say no to it because I wasn't fit enough to do it at the same time when I was singing. So I went back to my chambers to work on myself and get more strong to be able to fulfill that, because I completely believed in his idea. He had so much poetic, how do you say, he always calls this poésie in that style, and I totally believed in that, and with him I found for the first time this fluid physical expression and the balance with the music at the same time to find it. And it's possible, but it requires hard work. We have to be nearly athletes, singers. And I think of Bob Wilson. I mean,
I think
this production.
People sometimes who come to the opera have no idea of the work behind what they see on the stage on the part of the singers. I want to, both of you have had, I mean, you, Karita, made your Met debut in 1990, Ben in 91, and you have been and will continue to be major parts of the Metropolitan Opera. The Met, in many ways, is different from any other opera house in the world. First of all, sheer size. It's much larger than the European houses. People who haven't traveled may not even realize that it's really more than twice as big as many of the European houses. Mm-hmm. How would you each describe the experience, the atmosphere here, the dealing with the acoustics, with the size of the house, the orchestra, and so forth, of singing here?
Well, maybe I should describe my first encounter with the Metropolitan Opera House. Was in 1988 as a member of the National Council. And there were 26 of us at the semifinal level who would each sing a couple of arias, and 11 of us would be chosen. And when I came out, it was with piano, and I came out and I looked at this house, and of course this is a famous, famous look from inside, and I'm seeing it from the stage. I was totally intimidated, and I sang not so well for the first aria, and then I thought, well, it's now or never. When the second aria, I just let her fly, and it worked. I got into one of the final 11. And then I had to work at actually becoming comfortable with actually singing on the stage and not being intimidated by, really, its reputation. But acoustically, this is a fabulous place to sing. It is not at all difficult to sing in. One of the things we're listening
for... I wish the radio audience could see Karita Mattila vigorously nodding her agreement with that.
Yes.
In the house itself, when you're singing, one of the things that we are looking for on the stage is that we hear our own voice a little bit back. Just, it doesn't have to be an echo like you might think in a train station or a church or something, but we need to hear just a little bit of something that says, ah, my voice is present in the house and I don't need to work any harder for that to happen. It's like something inside of you. It's not really thought through.
I totally agree. You just put it so well. Yeah. I have nothing to add. I've had exactly the same kind of feeling with that acoustic. It's just the size of it can be intimidating. But as soon as you are on that stage, I don't know where it comes from, this carrying element. And you have the feeling that you are there, present. That was so well put. Now, why do I try to, with my limited English?
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, I can't give this interview in Finnish.
I want to thank you both, Karita Mattila and Ben Heppner.
And that was Henry Fogel talking to Karita Mattila and Ben Heppner. And if these insights into what it's really like to be singing on an operatic stage, projecting to 3,000 highly critical people, if this interests you, then stay tuned for this next little highlight from the Met's ongoing series of short features, where Bill Crutchfield talks about being a bass.
The bass line is the lowest part of a musical composition, and the bass voice is the one that sings that part in a vocal ensemble. Sometimes this lowest of male voices is used that way for solos as well. Handel, for instance, often puts it on the actual bass line of the music, along with the cellos and contrabasses in the orchestra. In most later operas, the bass is treated as a melody part, like the other voices, only lower in pitch. Its standard range could be defined as two octaves from low F to high F, both extremes on display in a memorable line of King Philip from Verdi's Don Carlo. A few basses sing even higher than this, and many sing lower. The lowest ones are often called basso profondo, deep bass, and they may sing as far down as the C, that's the lowest string on the cello. All through the history of opera, there's been a strong tendency to cast the bass as a king, a priest, or some other kind of older authority figure, except for the special category of basso buffo, comic bass, who is usually older but not wiser, like Donizetti's garrulous Don Pasquale.